content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the first half hour, I will be reading for you to you from various sources. And actually, this is my only half hour with you today. We're going to start with an article from AARP, the magazine, up front, the A-List, 7 Things We Love About the Karate Kid. He's been an underdog icon for 40 years plus. The first Karate Kid was when I was 22, and I'm still playing that character. Sometimes it has been great, and sometimes it has been confining. But I take pride in paying the legacy forward. 2. A Hoofer Wannabe. I took dance as a kid. I wanted to be Gene Kelly from the moment I first saw those MGM musicals. 3. He wanted to grow up faster than he did. I had been in 8 is Enough, then got this part in The Outsiders, an amazing movie with an amazing cast. I thought I was beyond the teen heartthrob thing, answering questions like, "What's your favorite color?" for magazines. But when I went to see Outsiders director Francis Ford Coppola, he had a bunch of teen magazines on his desk because he was figuring out who kids wanted to see. So here's my note to a young person. Be careful what you think you might know at a young age. The 80s teen crush only fell for one girl. I got to work with beautiful, dynamic actresses like Elizabeth Shue and Marissa Tomei, my cousin Vinny. So people are like, well, who was the one? And I know this is lame, but my girlfriend wife was the one. We met at like 15, 16, and I wasn't looking anyplace else. 5. He didn't stray very far. I was a Long Island kid, and I still live in the burbs. My parents are there. They'll be the first ones grabbing this article, I'm sure. We all get AARP, the magazine, now. 6. He only recently took up martial arts. In the 80s, I was like, are we done shooting? Getting kicked is not fun. But in the past 7 or 8 years, since I went back to playing my Karate Kid character on Cobra Kai, I've gotten into martial arts. But no, I don't start the day kicking and punching. Screaming, maybe, but not kicking and punching. And finally, 7, he keeps it real. Will I be playing this role in my walker? Maybe, if there's genuine honesty and it feels fresh. I've never learned to never say never. No, let me say that again. I've learned to never say never. Never. And this article was as told to Judith Newman. Ralph Macchio, 63, finished up the 6th and final season of the popular Netflix show Cobra Kai in February and reprises his role in The Karate Kid and Karate Kid Legends in theaters now. Now, in this same article, later on, there's an article under Real People, Inspiring Stories of Friends and Neighbors in Their Own Words. And this one is entitled The Real Second Act, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Health Benefits. This computer pro found a new mission, teaching Tai Chi. Young Lee, 88, was not an athlete in her youth. She didn't even learn the slow, graceful martial art of Tai Chi until 1999, when she decided to retire from her tech job because of a ruptured disc, Lyme disease, and vertigo. Lee then signed up for a Tai Chi class at her local senior center in Edgewater, Maryland, and found that this practice helped her restore her strength, stamina, and overall health. So when, in 2004, the Tai Chi instructor invited her to take over one of his classes, she signed on. Tai Chi helped me recover, she says. I want to give that help to others. And I don't often describe pictures, but this one is really lovely. She's against a wooded background. She's got on a red silk top and pants with a black oriental type design at the neck. She has dark hair cut short, and she's in a lunge position with one arm up and the other one down. It's a really beautiful pose. Now, also from AARP, the magazine, under the heading of Healthy You, run a mile without running. To get the health benefits of jogging, perform these four exercises in order. Rest 30 seconds between each. Do the whole plan twice, about 10 minutes total, and that's a mile. This is by Myatt Murphy. 1. Calf weight, calf rises. Body weight, calf rises. Stand on the lowest step of a staircase, facing the stairs. Hold onto a railing for balance. Place the balls of your feet on the edge of the step so your heels hang off. Slowly raise your heels up as high as you can and then lower them down as far as you can. Do as many repetitions as possible. If you don't feel steady on a step, try doing the move with both feet on the floor instead. Next, shadow boxing. 1. Get into a boxing stance with your feet hip-width apart, elbows close to your body, and fists in front of your face. 2. Take one step back with your left leg and bend your knees slightly. Throw a punch with your right hand, reset, then throw a punch with your left hand as you rotate your torso to the right. Throw a total of 10 punches, then switch your stance and do the opposite, stepping back with your right foot. 3. Alternate stances every 10 punches. Box until slightly fatigued. Body weight lunges. 1. Stand with your back straight, feet hip-width apart, arms at your sides. 2. Step forward with your left leg, leaning forward until your left knee is above your toes. Your right leg should be as straight as possible behind you, right heel raised off the floor. Push yourself back up into the starting position. Now repeat the move, this time stepping forward with your right leg and keeping your left leg straight. Continue alternating between your left and right leg for as many repetitions as possible. And then ropeless skipping. 1. Stand straight with your arms by your sides, palms facing inward. 2. Rotate your forearms in a small circle and hop as though you're skipping rope, keeping your legs and feet slightly apart. Keep your head facing forward. Only hop off the floor an inch or two and land on the balls of your feet to reduce stress on your knees. Continue jumping at a comfortable pace until slightly fatigued. And this, I call hopping, doing things like this on one leg, and what they mean is for you to jump with both feet slightly off the floor. Next article, also from AARP, the magazine, under Healthy You, skin cancer is trickier than you think. The disease can show up in unexpected ways on your body. Here's what to look for. Can I show you one more thing? I was at the dermatologist's office for my semi-annual skin check, and he had just finished the exam, but something was still gnawing at me. I have this tiny rough spot on the bridge of my nose. If I scrub it off, it bleeds, I said. He looked at it under the magnifying light. It could be precancerous. Let's freeze it and see if it comes back, he said, spraying it with liquid nitrogen. It did come back, twice, so I made an appointment for a biopsy. I felt only a pinch of the needle numbing the area before the doctor shaved off a thin layer of skin for testing. A week later, he called with the results. Squamous cell carcinoma in situ. In situ means it had not spread past the top layer. But because this early stage cancer could become invasive, my doctor recommended Mohs surgery to ensure all of it was removed. There's an article on Mohs surgery coming up next. The following week, I had the procedure. See something, say something. My father died of stage 4 melanoma when he was 76, so I take skin cancer seriously. Yet, even though I was religious about getting annual exams, it turns out that wasn't enough. On top of dermatology exams every year, or more frequently based on your history, monthly self-checks at home are important, says Karen Stolman, MD, a board-certified dermatologist with Park City Dermatology in Utah and a spokesperson for Skin Cancer Foundation. You're just looking for something that's new or unexpected or a change that you don't think is right for your skin, Stolman explains. You don't have to know what you're looking at or diagnose it. When I began seeing a dermatologist in my early 40s, I was skeptical. I had noticed any new moles or marks. But by paying attention, I have become familiar with the landscape of my skin. I'm learning that skin cancer and precancer can take on a different texture or appearance than the classic signs people are usually told to watch out for. Look for the ugly ducklings. Dermatologists have done a pretty good job educating the public about malignant melanoma, says Alex J. Charles, MD, a board-certified dermatologist and chairman of the Department of Dermatology at Dooley Health and Care in Hinsdale, Illinois. One of the deadliest forms of skin cancer, melanoma, often begins as a brown or black mole that becomes larger or irregular. When you Google warning signs of skin cancer, what you'll typically get are the ABCDEs of melanoma. A. Asymmetry. Two halves that don't match. B. Border. Irregular, scalloped, or poorly defined edges. Color. C. Multiple colors or shades. D. Diameter. The size of a pencil eraser, or it can start even smaller. E. Evolving. Changes in shape, size, color, or presentation. Itching, bleeding, crusty, raised. While these signs are important, the two most common types of skin cancer, basal cell carcinoma and squamous cell carcinoma, typically present in other ways, including a reddish, irritated area or open sore that persists, may crust, bleed, or ooze, a pearly bump or nodule, clear or pink, may be pigmented in people of color, a small, pink, or elevated growth, crusted indentation in center, raised edges, may bleed, a scar-like area, often with poorly defined borders, a wart-like growth, may crust or bleed. I'm going to add another one. I had one that looked like the end of a toothpick. It was pointy and thin, and it would come off and then come back, and it was squamous cell. The precancers that dermatologists find daily, called actinic keratosis, start out pink or red and scaly, and they're typically where they've had the most sun, Stolman says. A good takeaway is to look for the ugly duckling, says Kelly Nelson, MD, a board-certified dermatologist and professor of dermatology at the University of Texas, MD, Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. If you have one thing on your skin that is looking or behaving in a way that's different, that one thing should probably be evaluated by a doctor, she explains. Though skin cancer occurs most often in people with fair complexions, Nelson said it can strike anyone, even patients with very dark skin. Because of a misperception that people of color don't develop skin cancer, they and their physicians may not be on the lookout. As a result, skin cancer is often diagnosed at a later stage in patients of color. Several brands of sunscreen, such as Black Girl Sunscreen, Bolden Brightening Moisturizer, and Elta MD UV Clear that are now available can protect people with darker skin without leaving a dull white coating. Prepare for your next checkup now. Skin cancer is of increasing concern as we age, Stolman says. Today's precancer may be from sun damage 10 to 20 years ago, but it can also build over time with each exposure. In addition, with age, our immune system becomes less capable of protecting us from all forms of cancer, including skin cancer. Staying on top of your risk positions you to take advantage of breakthrough skin cancer treatments. In February 2024, the Food and Drug Administration approved Amtavi, the first cellular therapy for advanced melanoma. It follows a number of recent breakthroughs on this form of skin cancer, which accounts for the majority of fatalities from the disease. And that's spelled AMTAGVI. I keep a list on my phone of suspicious spots to ask about at my next checkup. If something new appears that I'm especially worried about, I'll make an appointment right away. It doesn't hurt to take a photo of anything that looks odd so you can track how it changes over time. If you don't already have a dermatologist, it can be a long wait for an opening. Try elsewhere if a practice can't see you within 3 months. You can also ask your primary care provider to take an initial look and help with a referral or next steps. And here we have, what is Mohs surgery? Also known as Mohs micrographic surgery, this procedure, performed under local anesthesia with the patient awake, is successful up to 99% of the time for untreated skin cancer, 94% for recurring cancers, and produces minimal scarring. The surgeon removes a thin layer of tissue and, while you wait, examines it under a microscope. The process is repeated until the tissue shows clean margins, no cancer cells remain. And here we have another sidebar, a dose of prevention. If you've had multiple precancerous or cancerous spots in one area, especially on sun-exposed parts, several therapies can help prevent future cancers. These are field treatments and are intended only for actinic keratoses or superficial skin cancers, early basal cell and squamous cell carcinomas affecting the top layer of skin. There's Fluracil 5-FU, a topical chemotherapy cream, is applied once or twice a day for several weeks to target cancer cells near the skin surface. The treated skin can become red and sensitive until it heals. Then there's photodynamic therapy, PDT, uses a topical light-sensitive drug that is absorbed into precancerous cells. A special light activates the drug and destroys them. The therapy usually needs to be repeated every 1 to 5 years. Additional therapies for sun damage include fractional laser therapy, as well as carbon dioxide laser and chemical peels, which may be less effective. Next, I'm going to go to the Psychology Now issue that we've been looking at, and there's some sidebar articles with, along with the one that we've been reading about extroverts and introverts. This one is a Q&A, Ask the Expert. Steve Myers, no relation to Isabel Briggs Myers, is a visiting fellow at the University of Essex and the author of Myers-Briggs, Typology versus Jungian Individuation. What do the terms extroversion and introversion mean? The same terms can mean different things to different people, depending on which theory they use or which aspect of the theory they focus on. Some definitions are simple, but others are more complex. For example, five-factor theory, also known as the Big Five, is relatively straightforward because it defines extroversion as how outgoing or sociable a person is, or how much they are energized by being with other people. Hans Esnick's definition is a little more complex because for him, extroversion refers to highly degrees of brain arousal in responses to external stimuli, although this produces some overlap with the Big Five. The two terms, introvert and extrovert, were originally coined by Carl Jung. Are his definitions simple or complex? They are complex. Within his developmental theory, which he called individuation, extroversion and introversion are complementary attitudes or mechanisms within the individual that are akin to systole and diastole in the heart. We need to use both, and we all do. However, Jung observed that some people had a habit of using one mechanism more than the other, and he described those people as extroverts or introverts. But he also said there is a third group of people, the largest group, who have a balance between the two. Eric Newman developed the idea of extroversion and introversion within the individual process, and in agreement with Jung, suggested that their interaction can sometimes lead to a new third attitude, which Newman called centroversion. The idea of centroversion, or ambiversion perhaps, is not widely discussed, not even in Isabel Briggs Myers' popular theory that is based on Jung's concepts. Why is that? Isabel Briggs Myers modified and simplified Jung's theory to suggest that everybody falls into one of two groups, depending on whether they prefer to deal with the external world of people and things or the internal world of ideas and information. She believed that this was much more relevant to everyday psychology. It gives people a simple heuristic toolkit for dealing with relationships and teamwork, and it supports some degree of personal development. However, this meant that she left out the more advanced development aspects of individualization. There is some value in both the Myers-Briggs toolkit and Jung's individuation. And finally, can you give an example of the toolkit, for example, how it can help an extrovert and introvert sitting near each other at work? Extroverts tend to develop ideas at work by discussing them with other people, whereas introverts tend to think them through. Both can produce good results, but their interaction can sometimes lead to conflict. For example, the extrovert might see the introverts doing nothing and start talking, but the introvert is thinking things through, and the extrovert's interruption makes them lose their train of thought. On the other hand, when the introvert wants to discuss something, they might send an email with a large attachment to read. This is a waste of time for the extrovert, who would rather the person sitting 6 feet away just talk to them. And even when they do start talking, they misunderstand the nature of each other's ideas. The extrovert fails to recognize how much thought has gone into the introvert's ideas and tries to change them, to the annoyance of the introvert. The introvert fails to recognize the provisional nature of the extrovert's ideas and dismisses them all as ill thought through, to the annoyance of the extrovert. Rather than getting annoyed with each other, the toolkit helps them recognize their different styles, respect the stage of development at which their ideas are shared, and work out how to accommodate each other's preferences. Next sidebar, the Gestalt view. Personality begins where labeling ends. Identifying and understanding more about our personality type can be an empowering experience. For many, it can also provide reassurance and lead to more confidence, enabling us to play to our strengths and to become unapologetic about who we are. Understanding more about preferences and type can also help people to make informed choices. However, although understanding different personality types and their functions can be useful, more often than not, it can be helpful to view this information as a guideline. Naturally, it isn't as black and white as grouping people into introverts and extroverts. Often, we can be each type in different environments and with different people. Gestalt psychology, a humanistic perspective, refers to personality within its concept of self, which is viewed as being co-created in the process of making contact with the environment, meaning that when we have contact with another person, persons, activity, place, or thing, we may respond differently depending on the factors at play. Gestaltist Dave Mann coined the term selfing, turning the noun into a verb, illustrating how self can be viewed as an active state or occurrence. It's a widely held view in Gestalt that selfing is driven by the environment and contact we make with other individuals, and selfing is expressed or experienced differently depending on the context. For example, some people may experience themselves differently when in contact with their parents or family members versus when interacting with friends or colleagues. Viewing self as a changeable notion opens up the idea of possibility, hope, change, and reassurance in the implication that personality doesn't have to be viewed as fixed. And finally, we have, where do you direct your energy? The following table lists words and expressions that are often associated with one or the other. Extroversion, social, expressive, many, broad, interaction, outward, action before thought. Introversion, private, quiet, few, deep, concentration, inward, thought before action. Now back to AARP, the magazine, and Money Saver. Fire, flood, your financial go-bag. If a natural disaster forces you to flee your home, having these items ready to go in waterproof, zip-top bags will make it easier to piece your life back together. Personal documents. Take originals or copies of Social Security cards, passports, birth certificates, marriage licenses, divorce decrees, and estate planning documents. Note, some organizations will only accept the originals, says Stacy Miller of Bayview Financial Planning in Florida. Home inventory. Shoot a video of your home with your running commentary. Video every room, every closet, your drawers. And download it to a USB drive and save a copy online. Cash. Having cash can help you get through a few days of tapped out ATMs or power outages. How much? There's a balance between how much do you fear being a potential target and how much do you feel you need. Insurance policies. The paperwork you receive when your homeowner's or rental's policy renews has information you'll need. How much you're covered for, your policy number, whom to contact for a claim, and how much you can spend on lodging. Account information. Recent bank, brokerage, credit card, and retirement statements will make it easier to track down your assets and get replacement cards if needed. Utility bills will have account and contact information. Phone numbers. Bring printed contact information for local services, friends, and relatives, and any other important contacts. If you lose power, you can't charge your phone and see that information. And finally, your virtual bag. Store copies of your bag's contents online using a service such as Google Drive, Microsoft OneDrive, or Dropbox. And I have time for one birthday. Helen Mirren, July 26th. She was honored with a special edition role model Barbie doll last year, and she turned 80. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.